Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman.
Your home for truth in broadcasting.
Now, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the U.S. Constitution. I got an email this morning, being a card-carrying member of the ACLU proudly for decades. I got an email this morning from Anthony D. Romero, the executive director. The subject, they failed freedom, we're suing. Dear ACLU supporter, today elected officials in Washington sold out the Constitution again. This is an email that went out yesterday. Cowed by the Bush administration's pre-election scare tactics, the Senate passed freedom-stealing FISA legislation undermining your Fourth Amendment rights. On the phone with us right now, Caroline Fredrickson, the director of the ACLU Washington Legislative Office, DCACLU.org is that website. Carolyn, is it Caroline or Carolyn?
Caroline.
Caroline. Caroline, welcome to the program.
Oh, it's great to be here.
Thank you. You are, I assume, an attorney?
I am.
First of all, in your opinion, what is the, you know, what happened yesterday?
Well, what happened yesterday was a travesty, ultimately. It was a sad indication of the power of President Bush to use fear-mongering to get the Democrats to roll over. And it's sad at any time, but it's particularly sad at the moment when the president's popularity rating and approval rating have declined to record low levels. But Congress still seems unable to serve as an independent body, to be a check on excessive abuse of powers by this administration. And so they passed legislation now on its way to the president, who will sign it in an hour. And it's going to be the law of the land, that is, until it gets overturned by a court.
So it sounds like you're suggesting that the reason that the Democrats who voted for this voted for it was what I believe to be the same reason why Hillary Clinton voted for the war in Iraq, not because she believed it was the right thing, but because it seemed to be the politically expedient thing to do.
Well, in some cases, yes, and in some cases, I think some of them were just misinformed or don't have any sort of instinctive or sophisticated understanding of our Constitution.
Right.
So it depends. I think it depends member by member what their sort of dominant reason was. For some, it was clearly a pure political calculation, a faulty one, I think. Their reasoning, and some of them are very direct in saying it, their reasoning is essentially that because the economy's in the tank, people don't like the war in Iraq, gas prices are through the roof, everything favors the Democrats in the elections coming up, except one thing, and that is national security. And so, therefore, in order to take that off the table, and I'm quoting directly from a member of the House, in order to take that off the table, we just need to basically give in to what the president wants.
Yeah.
So, you know, that it's a cynical, very cynical approach to politics when you think that the Constitution is worth compromising. And it's also a really faulty political analysis, because I think people now understand that the country has moved on But they've left Congress behind. The
but I don't think the Congress gets it. I mean, and this is the pressure that is being brought to bear, for example, on talk show, on progressive talk show hosts is, you know, hey, they don't rock the boat. We can't afford to lose any votes. This could hurt Obama, blah, blah, blah. Don't, you know, get in line, go along. And I'm just not buying it. I think that Hillary Clinton voted for the war in Iraq for the exact same reasons, because she wanted to take national security off the table and she thought it was right. And it ended up biting her in the butt. Arguably, I think that that was the one thing that caused her to lose to Barack Obama in the primary more than anything else.
Right, and now we have Barack Obama doing the flip-flop after right. he's clinched the nomination.
Now, there's another possible dimension to this, and this is one that goes to the same area. This morning, I filled in for Carl Wolfson, who's our local host here on KPOJ in Portland, Oregon. I mean, right now you and I are talking on a national show, but we do it out of our studios here in Portland, and Carl has laryngitis, and so filling in for him, I interviewed one of our members of Congress from and I'm not going to, you know, I don't want to get into a whole thing naming him on the air here right now, but, you know, I said on the air to him, sir, you wimped out on impeachment, you know, which he did not, you know, he kind of took exception to, shall we say. But I think that there, and what he said, and which is true, is that the Democrats in Congress believe that the Republicans want there to be a vote on impeachment. They want there to be a debate on impeachment. And I think that the Democrats are totally wrong on this. But Jonathan Turley on MSNBC a few days ago laid out this scenario. And I'd like to get your thoughts on this. We're talking with Caroline Frederickson, director of the ACLU Washington Legislative Office. Here's Jonathan Turley, constitutional scholar and professor of constitutional law at George Washington University.
Now, there was a recent judgment just a few days ago in the E.L. Harriman case where a federal judge said, obviously, the president committed an illegal act. That illegal act is defined as a felony, a crime, under federal law. So what the Democrats are doing here with the White House is they're trying to conceal a crime that is hiding in plain view, that everyone can see it. And so the argument for it is quite simple. Nobody wants to have a confrontation over the fact that the president committed a felony, not once, but at least 30 times. That's a very inconvenient fact right now in Washington.
So could it be that the Democrats rolled over on FISA and did so quickly and so enthusiastically? I mean, this thing just bolted out of the gate over in the House of Representatives with Nancy Pelosi, because as some of these lawsuits, some of these civil lawsuits come forward, the evidence would be out there for the entire world to see that George W. Bush had committed felonies that were far worse than getting it on with Monica Lewinsky in the White House.
Well, you know, it's very possible. I mean, it does smack of a cover-up, right? I mean, the idea that you don't want these cases to move forward, that you don't want these people who have had their data given over to the government in violation of the law, have had their phone calls monitored, their emails read, that they can't pursue any kind of vindication through the judicial system. Why not? You know, these companies are clearly capable of defending themselves. And if they were really doing the bidding of the government, and they had some reasonable basis for doing so, that would, I'm sure, be taken into account in whatever assessment of damages. But the evidence that's going to be shown is going to tell us how this whole system operated. And ultimately, you know, fingers may point to the president. I mean, they've got to in some level. FISA, I think people don't understand, has criminal penalties associated with it.
2 years in prison for each violation.
And one of the things that is not immunized by this legislation is a criminal prosecution.
Which brings up an interesting question, because the apologists for this vote, for the Democrats and the Republicans, for that matter, all the Republicans who voted for this thing and the few Democrats who did, they're saying, well, you know, we didn't take criminal prosecutions off the table. But my understanding is that if there's going to be a criminal prosecution, it has to run through the executive branch. Mukasey seems to be reluctant to prosecute
that's
Republicans.
That's right, but there's going to be another administration not too long from now. You know, there is a potential, and I think, you know, I would like to take Senator Obama at his word. He said to a reporter, of course, this was during the primary season still, so you have to take it perhaps with a grain of salt, but he said that he would have his attorney general look into whether crimes have been committed.
But that was the same time he said he'd filibuster this FISA bill.
Well, there you go. So, as I said, you may have to take it with a grain of salt. But I think it's up to us to put a lot of pressure on. You know, there are going to be a lot of Democrats, assuming Obama were to win the presidency. There are Democrats who just want to say, you know what, We have to look forward.
Right.
You know, we are future-oriented.
They're saying that.
Exactly. And, you know, I think those of us who understand that history repeats itself if you don't pay attention to it,
yeah.
and sometimes even if you do, we understand that unless we get a grip on what happened, unless we have another church committee, the committee that was put together by Congress under Senator Church after the whole Nixon endeavors and his a variety of Watergate and other activities.
Well, in particular, Nixon's wiretapping of members of Congress and his enemies.
Well, there you go. That might have been the most important part of it. But that you need to have that kind of a committee. You need to have that kind of a thorough investigation, because otherwise we won't have laws like FISA passed. FISA, you know, for all of its weakness and faults, was actually a system that put some kind of check on the ability of our government right. to engage in domestic surveillance.
Caroline Fredrickson, we have to take a break. I want to hear what the ACLU is going to be doing. Can you come back in just a second after this break?
Absolutely.
And stick around with us and tell us, because you know, I did get this email from the ACLU saying, you know, they failed freedom, we're suing. I want to know what you're suing for, and I'll be sending you a check. So, ACLU.org is the website. DC ACLU for Caroline's specific legislative office. Caroline Fredrickson with us from the American Civil Liberties Union. Stick around. 16 minutes past the hour.
This is Tom Hartman.
The Tom Hartman Program.
Your radio support group for We the People.
FISA legislation a sellout? Is it the bad deal that Russ Feingold claims, or is it some sort of wonderful thing? And if so, why are all the Republicans voting for it? Why did Kip Bond say, gee, we got even more than we thought we would? We got even more than we asked for in this. Caroline Fredrickson is with us. She's the director of the ACLU Washington Legislative Office. They just sent out an email to all of their members. I'm assuming all their members. I am one, so I got it. I'm assuming that that's who it went out to, said, they failed freedom, we're suing. Caroline, welcome back. What is the ACLU going to do?
Well, we're suing.
Who?
We're suing. We are suing the government for arguing that this law is unconstitutional. I just go back to Senator Bond for one second to say, Senator Bond put it very well, because what he said was, yes, he's a Republican senator. He's the lead negotiator for the White House. He said, this bill, just like the bill that we passed in the Senate in January, we just made a couple of cosmetic changes to give the Democrats cover. That's what he said on the floor of the Senate. He couldn't have summarized it better. So clearly, I think many, many people in the country understood that the Senate bill was unconstitutional, highly problematic, an affront to our civil liberties. This bill is the same bill with very, very modest, cosmetic adjustments, as Senator Bond said. So the ACLU is going to be filing a lawsuit this afternoon. The president will be signing this legislation within the hour, scheduled for 1:15 in the Rose Garden. And at that point, we're going to go to court. This is a clear violation of the Fourth Amendment, which is supposed to require a warrant when the government wants to read our email or listen to our phone calls.
Right. So you said you're suing the government. Which agency? How does this happen?
Well, NSA is the likely target. you know, our litigators are haven't shown me the papers yet. It's all been very, very hush-hush.
Yeah. Well,
but
I guess it's all very kind
the
of
NSA is the agency that implements, so NSA will be the target. It's the National Security Administration. That is the entity that conducts what used to be surveillance of foreign agents and foreign powers and terrorists.
Right.
But since George Bush has been president, it has obviously they've been spying on a lot more people, including all
well,
of us.
There used to I thought there used to be a legal firewall that only the FBI could do domestic surveillance, and the CIA and NSA and the other spy agencies were required by law to limit themselves to international intelligence gathering.
Well, you know, all those firewalls have been dismantled, and even though there's also been a sort of an understanding generally that the NSA and the CIA were not supposed to be involved in domestic surveillance, just like our military is not supposed to be involved in domestic law enforcement. You know, for obvious reasons, in order to avoid becoming a police state, you need to separate these functions. That has just
right.
become much more muddled in the past years. And now, you know, it seems like all of our agencies are involved in all types of surveillance on Americans, including the Defense Department, which has done a variety of surveillance programs, including infiltrating peace groups and taking names when people demonstrate at military facilities and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's hard to separate the agencies now.
To what extent, Caroline Frederickson, the director of the ACLU Washington Legislative Office, DCACLU.org, and of course ACLU.org, and if you're not a member, by the way, of the ACLU right now, get over there and sign up. Caroline, to what extent do you think that the harms that have been done to our Constitution, the assaults from the Military Commissions Act to, you know, repealing basically habeas corpus, repealing posse comitatus, which the law from Reconstruction, which said that the U.S. military can't turn their guns on Americans on American soil, the repeal of habeas corpus, which said that you can't basically throw somebody in prison without at least telling them why and giving them an opportunity to defend themselves. To what extent do you think that a change of administration in the 1 minute we have left here will remediate these?
Well,
how deep is this damage?
I think it's going to be hard. I think it's going to be a lot of work for all of us, no matter who the next president is, if it's President Obama or if it's President McCain. I think Americans are going to have to engage in a very deep level, in a very sustained way, in order to turn this ship around, because I have not seen great leadership from Democrats in Congress. We have clearly been led in a very bad direction by the current Republican leadership. And I think unless we raise our voices very, very loud, you know, shout from the rooftops, I don't think we're going to be able to fix this mess.
Yeah, I agree. I am all in favor of Barack Obama becoming president and every single Democrat running for office getting into office. And at the same time, I believe that the minute that we all just start rolling over and saying, yep, whatever the party does is just fine, is the day we've lost our democracy.
Absolutely. And that's why I think it's been so important that people have told Barack Obama that they don't approve of his vote on this FISA bill.
Right.
It's the best way to make sure that he comes back and fixes it if he gets elected.
Yeah. And God bless him for, you know, good on him for putting it on his website and allowing that dialogue to be there. I mean, John McCain won't even let people get in the front of his plane to talk to him than through reporters unless they suck up to him. But still, you know, we have to draw a line in the sand. Caroline Frederickson, ACLU.org. Thank you, Caroline.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Give us a call at 866-303-2270.
I ain't no communist.
Find a good summary of this FISA bill, and I really think that it's time for all of us to put our country ahead of politics, no matter how inconvenient that may be over the short term. And the functional reality is just like 99% of the people who listen to Rush Limbaugh's show are going to end up voting for John McCain. This is not an anti-Barack Obama screed by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, when he was talking this morning about what's going on with Iran and how we have to really start, you know, ramping up some serious diplomacy in that part of the world, I was just so proud. I thought, this is a guy who will make such a good president. And we have to speak out against things like this FISA bill. We just have to. I mean, by the way, there's a great fact sheet over at Russ Feingold's website, feingold.senate.gov. And Bernie Sanders issued a statement on this yesterday. We'll talk with Bernie at length about it tomorrow, so I won't get into all of that. But Feingold points out a whole number of problems with this bill, including that the guidelines are not subject to judicial review. The bill does not require the government to obtain a court order whenever the significant purpose of the surveillance is to acquire the communications of an American. The bill does not include a prohibition on bulk collection. It allows the government to listen in on international communications to and from law-abiding Americans in the U.S. who have no connections to terrorism. The checks on the International Dragnet Authority are entirely inadequate in the opinion of at least that particular senator. Everything else is a statement of fact. That sounds like an opinion. There are no limits on the use of illegally obtained information, and there are few protections for the people. The bill does fix this one small problem that, if somebody in Saudi Arabia is talking to somebody in Oman and it happens to run through a switch in the United States, then we shouldn't, you know, they are not protected by the U.S. Constitution, and therefore it shouldn't be necessary for the administration to get a warrant to listen in. I agree with that. You know, that's a fix that needed to be done. But giving away the store in exchange for that, not a good idea. Sean in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, listening on 940 WINN. Hey, Sean, what's up? Sean, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hey, what's up?
Oh, yes. Listen, I've been listening to your program for a long time, and I'm really grateful that you are around.
Thank you.
Everyone else talks about the flavor of the day, nothing of substance. And I'm truly, really burning about the fact that I feel that personally that Americans really have betrayed their country. I mean, with all the information available, I mean, no matter how little information has been given out by the press, enough information is out for people to know how outrageously, what extreme that this administration has gone to rip off the nation. I mean,
I was astounded yesterday watching Chris Matthews and Hardball say, and he had Joan Walsh on from Salon, and she tried to rebut it, and he cut her off, and then he didn't even bring her back for the next segment. And he said, you know, that this, in fact, I should have recorded it. It was mind-boggling. He said, this legislation will allow the government to use these sophisticated tools now to listen in on terrorists, and that's a good thing. And this has got nothing to do with that. This, you know, the FISA allows the government to do that. So anyhow, Sean, did you have a question?
But you know, Tom, going even to a basic point. Look at this. We have a situation here where that we need to do justice. What is going to happen? I mean, it's going to be hunky dory right after the new administration takes over, and they always talk about, well, now we need to unify and so forth. So that means all the criminals get away with this.
Well, in this case, Sean, yeah, and thank you for the call. I mean, that's what's happened, is all the criminals are going to get away with it. That's what's happened in this case. And I think it's a tragedy and a travesty. It doesn't mean that you throw the baby out with the bathwater, but it means that you've got some pretty dirty bathwater now. Weldon in Minneapolis. Hey, Weldon.
Hi, Tom. I totally appreciate all the work that you do and everything that you say, but I just don't know what this latest Obama thing. I phoned in before and I asked you. I said, you know, does Obama get the progressive movement? And you know, I said, I think I can hear it in his voice, but I just can't see it anymore. And 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 I'm just wondering if it's not too late. Like,
I don't think that there's any perfect politician out there, Weldon. And I think if Bernie Sanders ran for president, he would melt as fast as butter in the hot sun. I mean, not Bernie would melt, but his support would, because frankly, the press in this country, and this is the thing that Obama is up against, and I think that we all have to understand this. But your point is well taken, Weldon. The press in this country is owned by huge multinational corporations. And there's a reason why when you see, you know, one lone liberal on a TV show, you know, Laura Flanders or Rachel, you know, Rachel Maddow or Ed Schultz or Joan Walsh from occasionally you'll see. There are three conservatives on there. There's a reason why the reason is because they're advancing the corporate interests of the masters of those shows. Television is the most powerful medium in America. You know, on radio, it's not that big a deal. On the right, they'll let Michael Savage get away with trashing George Bush, which he does almost every day, you know, ferociously, and other insanities in general. But, you know, it's no problem. And they'll let me get away with saying what I say. It's no big deal. But, you know, the TV, it's got to go down the middle with very few exceptions. And newspapers as well. And so the reality is that, you know, when Hillary Clinton at the time, and you got to get the zeitgeist of the time, when Hillary Clinton made what I believe was a political decision to support the invasion of Iraq, or at least to support the legislation that authorized the invasion of Iraq, or that arguably even that's a Republican meme, by the way. I believe that she did it because she thought that that's what she had to do to be able to run for president. And I think that Barack Obama voted for this because he thinks that this is what he has to do to avoid being beat up by Republicans. And I got news, you know, for him. Republicans are going to beat him up anyway, no matter what he does. And so, you know, it's just it's a shame and it's a loss. It doesn't mean that I'm not going to support Barack Obama or vote for him. You know, if there's one thing that a person you disagree with, and actually there's probably a couple things I disagree with Obama on, but, you know, by and large, this is American politics. We don't have a multi-party system. We don't have proportional representation. And so, you know, we do have to pick the best candidate. Not the perfect candidate, the best candidate. And Barack Obama is a damn good candidate. That said, this was the wrong vote. Jonathan in Tacoma. Hey, Jonathan.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. You have a great show, Tom.
Thanks. What's up?
Hey, Article 1, Section 9, right after the habeas corpus part of the Constitution, simply says, and I don't have it in front of me, so I'm kind of balling up, but Congress shall pass no law or ipso facto law. In other words, you can't come in office, break a bunch of laws, and then pass laws saying it was okay to break that law.
It's not what it means. The third says is no bill of attainder or ex post facto law shall be passed. It's quite simple. But an ex post facto law means making something retroactively illegal. It's not against the law to make something retroactively legal. It's not against the Constitution. Nope. We lost the caller. But anyhow, that's that. Joe in Pittsburgh. Hey, Joe.
Hi. I was watching on C-SPAN yesterday, and both Obama and Clinton voted yes for the three amendments that never carried.
Right.
And then I had to leave. But did Obama eventually vote for this bill?
Yes, and Hillary Clinton voted against it.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
I am shocked. But yeah. I agree with your comment.
Well, I'm not shocked because he had come out a week in advance and said that he was going to vote for the bill, even if the amendments didn't pass, which everybody knew they wouldn't. And he justified it, and he's got a blog on his website. And you know, good on him for having that, you know, for being able to talk about it on his website and not censoring the discussion, although it is getting harder and harder to find on that website. But still, I think it was a mistaken vote. Thanks a lot for the call. In San Francisco, Malcolm. Hey, Malcolm, what's up?
Yes, hi, Tom. Great show.
Thank you.
And, yes, I just wanted to say that I heard there's a certain provision that will allow Senator Obama on this FISA bill to be able to go after the telecoms in criminal court as opposed to civil court.
Right. Well, it's not so much that, gee, now we can go after these guys as criminals. We could always go after them as criminals. In fact, the FISA law that this amends and updates specifically provided 2 years in prison to any federal officer, which would include the President of the United States, for every violation of the law. And Bush violated the law at least 30 times and possibly thousands of times, depending on how you define it. What it did is it took off the table civil litigation, and civil litigation has a lower threshold for you have to prove the preponderance of the evidence, as I recall. I'm not an attorney, versus beyond a reasonable doubt. I mean, it's lower threshold of evidence for a conviction, and frankly, you know, there are some Democrats who I think are covering their own butts in this regard. They don't want to get dragged into it. There's some Democrats who have paid off on this, and there are some who are making a political calculation on this. And I would say to all of them, and all of the Republicans, by the way, let's keep in mind, all of the Republicans' support of this thing, that you are selling out the Constitution.
Tom Hartman.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
AJ in the chat room, he says, Tom, do you believe Obama was in a catch-22 position? If he didn't vote for the FISA bill, had he voted against it, he would have been called weak on terrorism. He voted for it, now he's against the Fourth Amendment. Yes, absolutely right. He would have been criticized no matter what. Now, the question, why are the Republicans so hysterical? Why was Kit Bond pushing so hard for there to be an elimination in this FISA legislation of civil prosecution capability, but didn't worry at all about criminal prosecution authority? Why is it that the Republicans allowed the Democrats to go forward and say, and all the talk show hosts, everybody said, well, we can still prosecute criminally, so we actually have a victory here because we can prosecute criminally? In my opinion, this is the reason why. Article 2 of the Constitution defines the executive branch. Section 2 of Article 2 defines the powers of the president. Quoting from paragraph 1 of Article 2, Section 2, he, the president, shall have the power to grant reprieves and pardons for offenses against the United States, except in cases of impeachment. In other words, if you take away the right to sue in a civil court and George Bush issues pardons, which takes away the right to sue in criminal court, then this is buried forever. And as Jonathan Turley, this really bears repeating, Jonathan Turley pointing out, there are crimes here. I guarantee you, mark my words, we have 193 days, 11 hours, 57 minutes until Bush leaves office voluntarily, assuming that he's not impeached, which obviously is not going to happen given the leadership of the House and Senate. And on his way out, he's going to issue pardons that are going to prevent there from ever being any criminal prosecution of this. because...
You know, there was a recent judgment just a few days ago in the El Harriman case where a federal judge said, obviously the president committed an illegal act. That illegal act is defined as a felony, a crime, under federal law. So what the Democrats are doing here with the White House is they're trying to conceal a crime that is hiding in plain view, that everyone can see it. And so the argument for it is quite simple. Nobody wants to have a confrontation over the fact that the president committed a felony, not once, but at least 30 times. That's a very inconvenient fact right now in Washington.
That's the Al Harriman Islamic Foundation, Inc., an Oregon nonprofit corporation, versus George W. Bush, President of the United States. And this was in the Ninth Circuit Court, U.S. District Court of the Northern District of California. Gar M. King, presiding judge. You can Google it. You can read the decision. And Jonathan Turley is spot on that. And in my opinion, that's what's going on. There's never going to be anything. All the Republicans didn't care about the criminal stuff because they knew that Bush would take care of that. He has the authority under the Constitution with a stroke of a pen to take care of that. And this will be buried forever. But they had to get the civil stuff out of the way because Bush cannot pardon civil offenses. John in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, John, what's up?
Hey, you know, a lot of people seem to forget that Article or Amendment 1 of the Constitution mentions a little thing called a redress of grievances.
Right.
That we have the right to petition the government for a redress of grievances. What is our grievance? That the Fourth Amendment has been violated and possibly the Ninth Amendment, which says the enumeration in the Constitution that certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people, which would be directly associated with the Fourth Amendment, which is those rights retained by the people.
Privacy. Right, but Congress, I mean, this law doesn't prevent us from petitioning the government for a redress of grievances.
Oh, well, yeah, if our grievance is that our privacy has been violated by the telecoms. And
well, you can still petition the government. That doesn't, you know, that doesn't mean that you're going to be successful.
Well,
the First Amendment doesn't guarantee success.
It doesn't guarantee success, but at least it guarantees our day in court. And if it's taking away our day in court and civil court, it's taking away our right of redress of grievance.
So you're suggesting
giving
that,
them immunity.
Okay, I think that you're. I agree with your sentiment. You know, let me say first of all, I absolutely agree with your sentiment. But I think that legally, and again, I'm not an attorney, but I think legally you're on thin ground. But it's a great sentiment, and it's one we should carry forward. It's absolutely one we should be carrying forward. So anyhow, Randy in Seattle. Hey, Randy.
Hi, how you doing today? Well, I think you're spot on in your analysis of Bush's plan to pardon everyone in his Rolodex. I'd like to spread the idea that any legal act such as a pardon done pro quid quo is an act of bribery and thus an additional crime not covered by the pardon.
Yeah, but, I mean, then you'd have to go back to the Clinton administration, the Bush administration, the Reagan administration. I mean, that is the one kingly right, and it was vigorously debated at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 in Philadelphia. I mean, they fought over this thing, and they finally decided to give one kingly right to the president, and that was the right to issue an absolute pardon. And that pardon cannot be construed as bribery. It can't be construed as anything. It is pure and simple a pardon. And I'm going on the record right now, here, today, whatever the date is, July 10th, 2008, that Bush will pardon anybody in his administration in advance, just like Jerry Ford pardoned Nixon, just like Reagan pardoned Weinberger and all that. I mean, just stopped those investigations screeching to a halt of Iran-Contra by simply pardoning everybody and anybody who could have even been remotely involved. They've already got them written up.
The Tom Hartman Program.
News without conflicts of global corporate interest.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
This is Tom Hartman,
where smart people get their news.
Now, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, it looks like they're even trying to Bush is even tying up appropriations, you know, financial appropriations legislation, these 12 major spending bills that typically get debated in Congress about basically the future of the country. Bush says, well, if you don't do it exactly the way I want it, I'm going to veto it. And so what's Congress going to do? Well, in all probability, they're just going to say, okay, here, have some money. We'll discuss it after you're not president anymore. Altogether too much of that going on. This is, frankly, there's a theme here developing, and I think we saw it in this FISA bill yesterday, this FISA vote yesterday, when 26 Democrats voted along with virtually all of the Republicans on this thing. And it has to do with a meme, a thought virus, an idea that I first really got back last summer when Tom Hayden and I were sitting in a radio studio in Dubrovnik, Croatia. We hung out for a week, and I learned a lot from Tom, and very pleased to have him back with us. Tom Hayden. Hey, Tom.
Morning, Thomas. How are you?
I am very well, thank you. A former state senator in California and obviously a longtime activist, one of the founders of SDS, author of the Port Huron Statement. You have two new books out, Voices of the Chicago 8, A Generation on Trial, and Writings for a Democratic Society, The Tom Hayden Reader. And let me strongly recommend both, in particular, the Writings for a Democratic Society. This is something that everybody should have on their bookshelf just as and should be reading.
Well, thank you very much.
Tom, you're great. And TomHayden.com, of course, the website. The concept that you shared with me when we were in Dubrovnik, and I've been rolling this thing around in my head ever since. We've talked about it a couple of times since then, but it seems that yesterday perhaps we saw this writ large, and I'd like to discuss it. In fact, a while back you wrote an op-ed piece that I believe was over in Huffington Post basically saying, let's not do anything to harm the probability of Barack Obama getting elected, even if he has to move a little to the center, as it were. And I'm sure I'm terribly misparaphrasing what you said. But it's this concept of the movement versus the Machiavellis.
Correct.
And riff on that for a minute, if you will.
Well, I think that movements change history and change the conditions and the climate. And the politicians, if they see that it's in their interest, they will respond to movements. I don't mean it that mechanically, but that's the gist of it. You can't expect Barack Obama to go left of the Democratic Party. You have to build movements that are so powerful that they compel attention from the national security elites and the White House staff and so on. I think we saw that with the civil rights movement and John Kennedy. We saw it with the labor movement and Franklin Roosevelt. We saw it with the abolitionist movement, Frederick Douglass and Abraham Lincoln. These politicians who seem models of greatness to later generations, perhaps, were enlightened Machiavellians, we can say. They were willing to respond affirmatively.
Yeah,
that's the only pattern I see consistently, and you've written about it with respect to the New Deal, and I think that is the pattern in our country.
Yeah, and in fact, that's the cover of one of my books, We the People, has a cartoon of a bunch of us marching down the street holding a flag, and the point that I make in the book is that it's about the parade stupid. You know, that
exactly.
Politicians, when they see a big enough parade running down the street, they will
exactly.
run out in front of that parade, hoist a flag, and say, hey, this is my parade. And therefore, the obligation is for us to be the parade. And are you suggesting, Tom, and I mean, you made that transition from being in the movement to being one of the Machiavellis to being in politics at a fairly high level in the state of California, in the seventh largest economy in the world, that politicians are entirely Machiavellian? Or is this just, this is the necessity of survival in that particular water?
I'm trying to develop a model or a concept at the risk of simplifying it that helps people understand how to move history along. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not true that all politicians are all Machiavelli. Even Machiavelli 500 years ago was a complex person who responded to different imperatives and so on. But sure. In general, the pattern I see is that social movements arise always at the margins, and I'm talking about everything from civil rights to Bob Dylan, rap music, cultural as well as political. And if they resonate with the history that came before, they survive attempts at repression or marginalization. They enter the mainstream, and sooner or later, a majority is responsive, and something happens. Along the way, two things occur. One, the movement divides between more pragmatic and more radical, and so does the establishment between more accommodating and more absolute hard line. So it's the interaction of these forces, social movements and Machiavellian power structures, that produces our ability to have this conversation without being shut down, for example. Mm-hmm. Air America being able to broadcast.
Right.
All the things we take for granted are simply the outcome of long struggles, over the role of the human in society, I guess.
So where do you think that the, you know, in this context, there's a movement right now that, you and I are of the same generation, and I mean, I was in SDS at MSU.
You're much younger.
Not that much younger than you are, but in any case, it's, I'm seeing a movement right now that I haven't seen since the late 60s.
Right. I'm very drawn to the Barack Obama movement, the unity of the African-American community, the galvanizing of all these millions and millions of young people of all backgrounds reminds me of the golden moments of the early 60s. And what I do like about Barack is the community organizing and progressive background. Here's a guy who probably realized very early that he had superb talent, that he was very charismatic, very effective, very smart. And, because of the climate created by past movements, he actually thought it was possible to run for office, including the president. And,
right.
And in his narrative, when he's at his best, he's reclaiming the story of social movements as part of the American narrative.
Right, and I would submit that up until last week, he was running as a movement candidate, and that
sort of
FISA legislation, he became a mainstream candidate.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. Whether it's him, whether it's falling victim to his own instincts for nuancing and positioning. Bad advice, but he's got to stay on message.
I mean, Hillary Clinton voted against this thing, for goodness
sake. Well, of course. I mean, she's still there innocently in the wings. You never know what might happen, but more dangerous. He's already said he's a centrist. He said that in his books. He said that in the campaign trail. Fine. That's why we formed a group called ProgressivesForObama.com that you can look at, because a centrist is kind of inviting, as he says, his friends on the left to push him.
Sure.
This is a very high level stumble here for the past week, and it's feeding into the Republican trap. The Republicans and the media want to disillusion his base and make him into a flip-flopper rather than a centrist. And so he's got to be very careful as he adjusts to this new stage that the campaign is in.
Yeah, yeah. And it doesn't seem that it's going, and the Republicans are throwing out these memes that he flip-flopped, for example, on Iraq, when in fact he didn't. I mean, most of the flip-flops that he's accused of, he didn't do. But the big one, he said he'd filibuster FISA and then he didn't, that's getting pretty hard to ignore.
Exactly, and when he falls into that, once the public believes he is a flip-flopper, then you can add any number of lies to the...
Right, and then the lies become credible. Tom, can you stick around for a few minutes?
Absolutely.
Great. We're talking with Tom Hayden. TomHayden.com is his website. He's got two new books out, Voices of the Chicago 8 and Writings for Democratic Society. Check them out over at TomHayden.com. 16 minutes past you.
Tom Hartman.
Uncommon sense from the radical middle.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Talking on the radio, 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hayden with us. TomHayden.com, his website. His new books, Voices of the Chicago 8, A Generation on Trial, and Writings for a Democratic Society, the Tom Hayden Reader. Tom Hayden, the former SDS leader and activist, and state senator in California. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Tom, you've been on both sides. You've been in the movement, and as I said in the last segment, and you've been in the inside of the political structure, as it were. I'm sitting here talking to the movement all day, every day. You know, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, and by and large, I don't think the politicians are much paying attention to what I'm saying. And to the extent that they do, by and large, it's, I'll come on your show if you will ask these questions or if you won't raise these topics and that kind of nonsense. And so by and large, we just say, forget it. But I'm wondering, you know, it seems to me that an incredible job of destructive politicizing is going on here with regard to the Republicans setting up Obama, like as you were describing going out the last segment. And how do we in the movement keep the movement strong and energized so that it can be a force for changing the presidency of President Obama and changing the Senate and the House in the next session, changing their behavior in a more progressive way, without reverting to the circular firing squad strategy of, oh my God, this person isn't perfect, let's shoot him. I mean, you know, not literally, but...
Well, that's definitely what the Republicans hope for, exploiting that tendency on the left.
Well, it's on the right, too, right now. I mean, you got Michael Savage trashing George Bush every day.
They have the same tendency on the right, I was going to say, exactly.
Yeah.
It's too late for a deep remedy. This is already underway. But I would say that in between sitting this out, as if we don't really care if Barack Obama is elected president of the United States, versus being and I put it kindly, an Obama maniac that follows him like a worshiper. There's plenty of space. I mean, SEIU occupies it, all kinds of issue groups, civil liberties groups. Most of these groups are well aware that it makes a difference who's president for their members, for their base.
Yep.
They're also well aware that they're going to be disappointed and they're going to have to fight like hell for everything that they can achieve. And so I don't think it should be a problem. I wouldn't listen to the people that scream loudest. I would ask them, if they call your program, do you plan to lift a finger for Barack Obama? If not, talk to you later. It's only 4 months.
Yeah.
Are you just going to spend 1 second voting and dis?
Yeah, no, that's my point. Is that voting is not enough anymore. We have to get active. We have to, and what I've been calling for all along is that we don't support the Democratic Party, but that we infiltrate it and take it over from the inside.
Well, I don't think it can be taken over, but I certainly think it can be influenced from within and without. An inside-outside strategy is what I would recommend.
Yeah.
But the case in point is on this wiretap bill. The activists, the bloggers did a good job of getting inside the Obama structure, they had an impact. They brought their existence very, very much to his attention. One hopes that they learn from that, that they can influence the process from within and without, not that he's just another politician, so why should we care?
Yeah,
so
and exactly, you're not going to win every battle, but that doesn't mean you stop fighting.
No, and if you want to, I mean, some things are extremely hard. It's hard if you're powerless to imagine the problem of running for president and imagining yourself being president, faced with the question of getting your troops out of Iraq, and worried about an embarrassing debacle on the way out, which will ruin your image forever. And that's not something that the peace movement should or does worry about, but that's what politicians who run for president worry about. So you have to come up with enough pressure and a strong enough climate to compel him to do
sure
what he knows he needs to do. Just as it wasn't easy with Lincoln, it wasn't easy with Roosevelt, it was not easy
with either
to get
Roosevelt.
Johnson to sign that bill. But no, you need the right combination of the person in power and the people in the streets to get historic reforms achieved. I don't know any other way in our history. I haven't seen it.
No, and the people and the historic people in the streets now are the people in the blogs. I mean,
well, they're also
those are the new streets.
I think they're also in the precincts. I mean, if you pass through the looking glass into the Obama campaign, there's an amazing world of people who are knocking on doors, who are getting up early, staying late. They're way beyond the Eugene McCarthy for president campaign, and they're the people we have to count on. They're certainly not hawkish, repressive, anti-civil liberties people.
Not just count on. Those are the people we need to support and encourage
exactly
as well. Tom Hayden, TomHayden.com, his website. Tom, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Great talking with you. I look forward to seeing you soon, 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Call Tom at
866-303-2270. One Raw Stories reporting on Politico's reporting, the note over Raw Story: after insisting for nearly 2 years that impeachment was strictly off the table, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi may be changing her tune. The Democratic leader said Thursday that the House Judiciary Committee could be holding hearings on impeachment articles introduced by Dennis Kucinich sometime in the near future. He's reintroducing a single article. And Politico says Pelosi has said previously that impeachment is off the table, blah-de-blah-de-blah. This is a Judiciary Committee matter, and I believe we will see some attention being paid to it by the Judiciary Committee, Pelosi told reporters, not necessarily taking up the articles of impeachment, because that would have to be approved on the floor, but to have some hearings on the subject. My expectation is there will be some review of that in the committee. Interesting. In the meantime, our conservative alert for the day: John McCain, of course, now screening phone calls. If you're on his conference calls, they don't call on you if you're anything other than a Jeff Gannon conservative blogger type. And George Bush, on his way out from the G8, he said, here's how he said goodbye to his fellow leaders. I kid you not. This is from the Associated Press. As he prepared to fly out from Japan, he told his fellow leaders, quote, goodbye from the world's biggest polluter, end quote. President Bush made the private joke in the summit's closing session, senior sources said yesterday. His remarks were taken as a two-fingered salute, I'd say a one-fingered salute, from the president from Texas, who is wedded to the oil industry. I'm quoting from the Associated Press. Yeah. So, George W. Oh, man. It is getting weird out there. 866-303-2270, our number. Justin in Hawaii. Hey, Justin.
Hey, I was just in D.C. For the National Education Association as a delegate, and I passed some interesting things. I didn't pass a NEA opposes legislation requiring biometric child fingerprint scanning, So I thought you'd find that interesting. But I did pass in front of 13,000 people that NEA opposes funding private military, paramilitary organizations with public tax money. And I talked about Blackwater and educated everybody about Blackwater. And I also passed NEA supports legislation to make war profiteering illegal. So it was very exciting to do that. And I had tons of people that came up to me and shook my hand. And but overall, my experience in D.C., I was really blown away about how many people were just so passive. And there wasn't a lot of, you know, people that were wearing shirts that were anti-Bush. Everybody was just there doing their thing. And I did go to the White House with a support the troops impeach Bush shirt. And I was surprised I got in and got the tour.
Ah, that's great. Well, congratulations, Justin. And, well done.
Thank you.
And thanks for the heads up on that. It's marvelous that you're out there doing that. From Justin in Hawaii to Justin in Woodland Hills, California. Hey, Justin.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Great. What's up?
Well, I want to get touch on the George Bush pardoning spree that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a conspiracy theory, but with him, I wouldn't put anything past him, knowing his track record. I firmly believe that, you know, during his last days of office, he's going to pardon pretty much everybody in his administration down the line involved in any of the wrongdoings he's done, from, you know, the way we got into the war, to the plane incident, to war profiteering, and down
yep.
the line.
Yep.
And knowing full well he cannot pardon himself, he will then turn the reins over to Dick Cheney to pardon him.
I don't think he's going to have to. I think that, you know, just like with Ronald Reagan and Bush Sr., if you can pardon enough of the people who are involved in the crimes, then no investigation of the crime will go forward.
But he's the last peg standing, so to speak, and everyone's still kind of pointing towards him. And knowing that
yeah.
Obama, you know, possibly will be the next president, I'm hoping. Obviously, I'm going to vote for him, but he said he would investigate. And, you know, there's always, you know, an end point to it, and that would be George Bush himself. So he might have to, I think he's going to have to insulate himself. And again, it's terrible to say that I distrust my government that much that he would do such a thing, but I wouldn't put it past him, and I wouldn't be shocked to see it. And I know it's kind of a conspiracy theory, but
yeah,
you know, it's mine.
We'll see, Justin, whether your crystal ball or mine, you know, which one lines up. It's, you know, we'll see. I believe that the reason why the Republicans were so enthusiastic to give civil immunity to the telcos and by extension to those in the administration is because they know that with a stroke of a pen, George Bush will give criminal immunity on his way out of office. And there's no way that the inspector general who works for George Bush is going to do any kind of criminal investigation between now and then, right? So the only thing that can stop this is an impeachment process. The pardoning power of the president is only interruptible if the president is being impeached. And it may be that Pelosi is starting to figure this out. Who knows? Maybe she's seen this game be played out. Liz in Valley Glen, California. Hey, Liz.
Well, I have a question on the same topic. And maybe this is a question for the lady from the ACLU. If we were in a time of war, and those people who outed Valerie Plame would be traitors, right? We
well,
don't treat them under the same statutes and laws as, you know, criminals.
I guarantee you if Bill Clinton had been president and he had outed a CIA officer in order to get political benefit, He would not just be impeached. I'm not exaggerating. There would be a small fringe of Republicans on the floor of the House calling for him to be put in front of a firing squad for treason.
I'm sure. So what does Bush do when he sees that terrorist every morning in the mirror? I think he's the biggest terrorist in America.
He certainly is using terror. He and Dick Cheney are using terror the way concert violinist uses their instrument. They've been doing it for a long, long time against all of us, and it is an absolute crime. Bernice in Santa Fe, New Mexico, listening on KTRC. Hey, Bernice.
Hi, Tom. I have a question about the peremptory pardon type thing, but before that, I'd like to make a suggestion. I'm not good at, you know, websites and whatnot, but maybe somebody could set up a website called something like Obama Supporters Against the FISA Vote. And
well, I think, you know, I've been talking about it today, but at a certain point we have to say, okay, we lost that battle, let's move on. And I think probably tomorrow is going to be the day that I'm going to move on from this.
Right.
But
well,
because, you know, there's nothing more to say. But
it would make a statement, and it could maybe say more than FISA, maybe for principles. And just saying that that 1 month, whatever we would have contributed to Obama, instead we'll give to the ACLU for their support for suing the government, you know.
I think we should do both.
Yeah.
I really think that it's important that we continue to feed the movement that on which Barack Obama is standing. Let's not forget that without his movement, he's got nothing.
Oh,
and,
I know.
And we've got and with his movement, we have the ability, if to the extent that we're part of that movement, we have the ability to influence him and his behavior, both as a candidate and as president. And I don't think that you know one bad vote is worth destroying a candidate over.
No,
no matter
and I'm
how
not
bad
saying destroy. You know, I'm just saying make a statement and just move on from there. But I do have a question about this. Is it legal? And I don't know. I mean, can Bush preemptorily pardon people if if charges have not been brought? He can.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. And in fact, Reagan did that with Caspar Weinberg. Yeah. Yeah,
okay.
you can do that, yes.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. And, in fact, Jerry Ford did that with Richard Nixon. You know, he pardoned him for all crimes, you know, I mean, just right across the board. I mean, it was just incredible. Michael in Los Angeles. Hey, Michael.
Hey, how are you?
Good. What's up?
Hey, so the Democrats continue to betray us, and the golden boy of hope and change has now done the same. And I really don't understand what it's going to take for the people, the sheep actually, but the people of this country to realize it's down to them, baby. It ain't ever going to be down to
them. It's always been down to us, Michael. From the founding of this republic, it's always been down to us.
It never, ever will. Never. And maybe when the militarized police come and take the remote out of one hand and the beer out of the other and press their shiny black boots firmly into the neck of the American populace, they'll begin to understand what the system, what the status quo means by freedom and democracy.
This is, Michael, I think this is one of the reasons why the African-American community in the United States is so galvanized by Obama. Forget the, setting aside the fact that he's African-American, but that he may have, because of a shared experience, a knowledge that they have experienced exactly what you're describing right now. One in 100 Americans is in prison right now. One in 100 Americans is in prison right now, and disproportionately it's African-Americans. And so, yeah, you're right. People get it when the shiny black boot is on their neck, and people are getting it in the United States, and the people that we need to help get it and bring into the movement are the people, you know, that are, you know, what Chris Matthews refers to as the regular people, right? Hank in Salem, Oregon. Hey, Hank, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I've got a scary thought that occurred to me this morning. And that's that with this FISA bill?
Yep.
Okay. How much longer is Bush going to be in office? Four
months,
5 months?
193 days.
Okay, 193 days. So who's going to be in office as the beneficiary of this FISA bill that gives him greater power and whatnot? It's going to be President Obama.
Or President McCain.
It's going to be the administration.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't see Barack Obama voting for this thing as a way of giving himself more power, of saying, you know, just like I didn't see Hillary Clinton voting for the authorization for Iraq as a way of trying to increase presidential power on the assumption that someday she was going to inherit it. I think that both of them, frankly, believe in limits, appropriate constitutional limits on presidential power. And I think that George Bush, not being a lawyer, having no background or training in constitutional law, not understanding these things, thinking himself he's the emperor, is the aberration.
Tom Hartman.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. 866-303-2270. George in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Hey, George, what's up?
Yes, Tom. Hi, how are you?
I'm well. How are you today?
I am doing very well. Thank you. I just wanted to talk to you about the War Powers Act of 1973. I was trying to, do some research on it, and I've heard a lot of, speculation about perhaps, the current administration may decide to perhaps bomb another Middle Eastern country and implement the War Powers Act and suspend the elections of November and so on. And, you know, I know it sounds a little far-fetched, but as some of the other callers spoken about, they wouldn't put anything past this administration, I wouldn't either.
This morning I talked with Francis Boyle, who's a professor of international law at the University of Illinois.
Yeah.
And this is on KPOJ on the morning show.
Right.
And I was unaware of this. He pointed out to me that Warren Christopher and James Baker, the two guys who battled each other in Bush v. Gore, or at least battled each other in Florida in 2000, if you haven't seen the HBO movie on it, it's fascinating. And Warren Christopher, just, you know, the absolute rollover wimp, and James Baker, in my opinion, a criminal. These two former secretaries of state have declared that the War Powers Resolution of 73 is obsolete and are proposing, quote, a new system of closer consultation between the White House and Congress before American forces go into battle, end quote. And they're suggesting that the president should consult lawmakers before initiating combat lasting longer than a week, and Congress, for its part, would have 30 days to approve or disapprove of the military action. This is a complete violation of the Constitution, which says that the sole power of making war lies with the House of Representatives and the Senate, with the Congress.
Correct.
And the reason why the founders put the sole power to wage war with Congress is because the Congress is the body which has to answer to the people every 2 years,
mm-hmm.
and not with the president. And I am just boggled that Warren Christopher, in particular, I mean, it doesn't surprise me that James Baker would be, you know, gung-ho for some fascist type of thing, but it boggles my mind that Warren Christopher is in support of this thing. So,
right.
Yeah, the War Powers Act of 73 is under assault. It was actually called the War Powers Resolution,
right.
And it is under assault. And this is one of those things that's probably going to slide under the radar until the last minute. Let's hope it doesn't happen.
What I understand, there was a secret law that an executive order that Bush signed that basically gave him unlimited authority in the case of war, and he could basically do anything he wanted.
Yeah, executive order number 50. Actually, there have been a number of them.
Right.
And they're extensions of a variety of previous ones that go back to Nixon.
Right.
And the question is, if the president were to declare an emergency, even if there were to be an actual legitimate emergency, and the president declared an emergency and then tried to use that power to totally usurp the Constitution and shut down Congress, would Congress or would the American people let him get away with it? That's the upside of Bush's popularity being so low right now, is because I have a feeling if his popularity is 50%, he'd try to pull something like that.
Right, exactly. I know. It's an interesting concept, nonetheless.
Yeah, it is.
And both of my state senators voted against the Feingold Amendment. I have one Democrat, one Republican, and I was furious of the outcome.
Yeah, George, I got to move along. But thank you very much for the call. I do appreciate it. Frank in Los Angeles, listening on K-Talk. Hey, Frank.
I'm sorry?
Frank, you're on the air.
Oh, I'm on the air. Hi, Tom. I just had you're talking about pardoning, and I do recall from my civics class that that's only for federal crimes, and there's still state crimes that are not pardonable. So I would suggest people, you know, address their state's attorney general and petition them to see if any state crimes were violated.
That's an interesting variation of Vince Bugliosi's suggestion that state's attorneys general should be trying to prosecute George Bush for murder on behalf of individual citizens of their states who've died in Iraq and Afghanistan, or specifically Iraq, I guess, since he lied us into that war. That's an interesting concept. Thank you very much for that. Mike in Hesperia. Hey, Mike.
Hi. Before I start, I wanted to make a comment about something you said earlier.
Mm-hmm.
There is a theme developing here, all right. It's called fascism.
Yeah, I don't disagree. The merging of corporate and state interests combined with belligerent nationalism.
Absolutely. Yeah. I wanted to say that there is something that we can do to fight back against this FISA bill thing. I refuse to do business with anti-American businesses conducting fascist activities in the United States. And you don't have to do business with phone companies that are trying to hurt you, especially AT&T and Verizon. You don't have to give these people your money.
Yeah, there's always like Vonage out there, and there's other
right.
companies.
There's plenty of places you can go.
Yeah, where you can use your phone over your cable system. Yeah, good point. Interesting. Bernice in Dearborn, Michigan. We've got a minute here left before this hour wraps up. Bernice, what's up?
Hi. This is perhaps a way-out idea, but at the Democratic Convention, when the delegates go through the roll call, if there are enough disenchanted progressives who changed their vote and go over to Clinton, is it possible she could be nominated?
I suppose it is, but it wouldn't be possible for her to be elected president, because what it would do is it would break the back of the movement that is formed behind Barack Obama right now. And the movement for Hillary Clinton, I don't think it has in part fractured, although much of it is still intact, but much of it has gone over with Obama. And B, I don't think it was ever strong enough to actually take the presidency, although I may be wrong on that, but I don't think it's strong enough right now. So, no, I think it would be a disaster for that to happen, Bernice. That's why we need to say, okay, this was wrong, this was a mistake, in my opinion, this vote of Barack Obama's, and we're moving on. It's just, no other way, frankly, I think, for us to deal with it beyond that. 57 minutes past the hour.
This is Tom Hartman.
The Tom Hartman Program.
Your radio support group for We the People. Listening to Tom Hartman.
The Tom Hartman Program.
The True People's Radio.
This is Tom Hartman.
So I go over to NewYorkTimes.com. I already knew Rove didn't show up this morning to testify before Congress in the Don Siegelman scandal. And NYTimes.com, I couldn't even find it on the page. I mean, maybe it's there in small print someplace. So I went over to WashingtonPost.com, and there it was in small print down at the bottom of the page. Former White House advisor, and you have the link to it, Rove ignores subpoena, refuses to testify. Former White House advisor Karl Rove defied a congressional subpoena and refused to testify Thursday about allegations of political pressure at the Justice Department. Linda Sanchez pulled the plug on this thing, or pointed it out, called him out on it, and said she said, I hereby rule, she's the chairwoman, this is of the Commercial and Administrative, the House Subcommittee on Commercial and Administrative Law, which is a subcommittee of the Judiciary Committee. And she said, I hereby rule that Mr. Rove's claims of immunity are not legally valid, and his refusal to comply with the subpoena and appear at this hearing to answer questions cannot be properly justified. So we will see now if the whole House decides to issue a contempt citation. But the bottom line here, Karl Rove is thumbing his nose. And first of all, a piece of advice to the Judiciary Committee. Subpoena Bill Canary. Bill Canary was Karl Rove's business partner. He is the husband of the woman who was the federal prosecutor who prosecuted Don Siegelman. He was the campaign manager for Bob Riley, the guy who, I believe it was Bob Riley, who won the election, in quotes, in the middle of the night, when only a Republican was left with the voting machines in this one district, when all of a sudden they did, oh, hey, look at that, 13,000 votes we didn't even know we had, and there they are, right there in the memory of the machine. Subpoena Bill Canary. He can't claim executive privilege. He will flip on Rove. Start there. I mean, you know, I realize Rove is real high profile and isn't that newsworthy and all that. This is the boring way. This is an organized crime organization. The Bush White House is a criminal enterprise. It's that simple. They have been breaking the law since they first came into office. Within weeks of taking office, they were preparing an illegal war against people who represented no threat to us. We now have 4.5 million of them displaced, the largest human refugee crisis on Earth at the moment. It depends. Some people would say Darfur is 3.5 million. Some say 4.5 million. But it's right. I mean, here we have Darfur and Iraq. Caused by us, caused by the criminals in this administration, this criminal enterprise inside the White House. Number one. Then you had the conspiracy to spy on the Democrats. Starting in February when Bush went to the telco companies and said, you're gonna spy on people for me. And we had, at the same time, operating out of Orrin Hatch's office, you had a guy who was hacking into Ted Kennedy's computer. And other members of the Senate Judiciary Committee looking at how they're going to take on the judicial nominees, the court nominees that were being put forward by Bush and the Democrats were just befuddled. How do these guys know what our strategy is going to be in advance? Well, because they're reading your computer. They've been spying on you. Orrin Hatch confessed to this. He fired the guy. That was the end of it. Well, this was back when the Republicans controlled the House and Senate. I mean, there are so many things that should be being investigated right now. But the bottom line is what you have in the White House is a criminal enterprise. You can't bring the RICO statutes against them, the organized crime statutes against them, because they're very, very narrow in what they define as, you know, who's under their purview, who you can go after. But this administration and this White House, run by a guy who knows nothing about the law, he's not a lawyer. There's some evidence that he even had other people take his tests for him in college. I mean, here's a guy who, we've had two successive coups, five Republicans on the Supreme Court putting Bush into office in the first place. Massive disenfranchisement of voters in Florida in 2000, in Ohio in 2004, and New Mexico, and numerous other states, and they're planning it again for 2008. The Republican Party has become a criminal enterprise. And the way that you successfully deal with criminal enterprises, and I've seen this. I've seen it up close. I've seen it from a distance. I remember when Louise and I were first dating. We were both teenagers back in Michigan, and her dad was the assistant attorney general for the state of Michigan, and he was in charge of prosecuting the Licavoli crime family. Peter Licavoli, the mobster who was operating in Michigan, lived in Arizona, as I recall. And I remember Louise and I having to try and figure out how to sneak around the state police who had staked out her house for protection of her dad. So that after hours we could get together. I mean, literally young teenagers. And how did her dad go after Peter Licavoli? He didn't do it by subpoenaing Peter Licavoli. He did it by going after the low guys in the mob and flipping them. That's what you do. You go after the guys at the bottom. Go after Bill Canary. Do this, run this like a mob prosecution, because it's the mob. We're dealing with an organized crime institution that now calls itself the Republican Party. It has been taken over by criminals, white-collar criminals, granted, most of them. The Jack Abramoffs of the world. Bill Canary, by the way, was also involved with Jack Abramoff. You know, how about subpoenaing Ralph Reed and getting some information about his activities with Mr. Abramoff? I mean, there's so many threads dangling out there that need to be pulled on. How about passing legislation to bring back the independent prosecutor? I mean, there's so many. This needs to be an organized crime investigation. It's not about politics. This is the mistake the Democrats are making. They think it's about politics. This is the way the media wants to play it. The Washington Post reporting, oh, this is all about politics. This is the politicization of the Justice Department. No, it goes way beyond that. Don Siegelman won an election, and it was stolen from him in the middle of the night by flipping electronic votes in a voting machine. Don Siegelman on this program has said that. Now, on TV, they don't want him talking about that. But he has said that on this program. So, number one, we've got vote fraud. We've got election fraud. It's not voter fraud. It's election fraud. The Republicans are all hysterical about voter fraud, which is, you know, their meme for, hey, let's make sure that anybody who is poor or a person of color or disabled or old enough that they can't remember where their birth certificate is, can't vote because they may vote Democratic because the Democrats are like the defenders of Social Security, you know, and things like that. Those transfer wealth programs that are so terrible. We don't want sick people voting. Can't have that happen. I'm telling you, that's the Republican plan for this upcoming election. Is disenfranchise as many people as possible. And they are using criminal means to accomplish it. And the Don Siegelman case down in Florida where this guy had the audacity to stand up and say, hey, wait a minute, my election got stolen. And then he said, and not only that, okay, they're not paying any attention to me saying it got stolen. I'm going to get reelected. And once I become governor, I'm going to prove it was stolen. And so they throw his butt in jail on trumped up charges that right across the board, any reasonable person looking at him would say, and a federal judge finally did, why are you prosecuting? Why is this guy in jail? He didn't commit a crime. And so today, Karl Rove did not show up. 10 o'clock this morning, did not show up before the House Subcommittee on Commercial and Administrative Law. This criminal, Karl Rove, did not show up. So let's go find his criminal co-conspirators. And bring them before the committee. And let them roll over on Rove in public. It'll happen, I'm telling you. 16 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program.
You are listening to Tom Hartman.
Defending America from the weapons of mass deception.
By the Teamsters, fighting to stop the unfair trade deal with Colombia. You can find out more at Teamster.org. That's in singular. Teamster.org. And by the way, just a heads up, on July 18th, that's next Friday, a week from tomorrow, I'll be broadcasting from Grand Rapids, Michigan, WTKG, our affiliate there. And 6:30 to 7:30 that night, I'll be doing a book signing and a dinner buffet, courtesy of Lanning's Catering, at the UAW Regional Offices. So we'll have a little more information on that, and we'll get that up on our website right away, too, for those of you in Grand Rapids who want to drop by and say hi. Phil Graham, the guy who authored the Enron loophole, you know, that led to all this speculation and that created Enron and made all that possible, the lead economic advisor to the McCain campaign, Phil Graham, has come out and said that we are a nation of whiners. We're just whiners. We're whining. At the same time, the people who aren't whining, they're betting. And betting with some education. People involved in the stock market, the serious large traders, are saying big problems ahead. This is from today's Washington Post, Harold Schneider's article. Shares of mortgage giants Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac plummeted for a third day this week, following comments by a former Federal Reserve governor that the two companies are nearing insolvency and reports of White House discussion about the need for a possible bailout. Now, my recollection is that these two organizations are sitting on something like $5 billion. Excuse me. My recollection is it's a couple of trillion dollars worth of assets. Let's see here. Freddie Poole said owed $5.2 billion, more than the value of its assets, while Fannie was approaching the same situation after a decline in the value of its holdings. Okay. So they're a few billion dollars short. In other words, their stock should be trading at zero. And still, Freddie Mac has lost 28% of its value in the first hour and a half of trading, falling to about $7.30 a share. Fannie Mae dropped as much as 18% and was trading at $13 a share. See, this is what happens when the people who are making economic decisions about the country go insane. In 1980, when Ronald Reagan was elected president as a result of the hostages being held in Iran for an extra few weeks, a deal that, in my opinion, was cut with the complicity of George Bush, the elder, and his CIA buddies, including Bill Casey, who became head of the CIA, and the day that he was going to go before Congress and testify about this, he was the director of the CIA. That day, he gets this brain seizure, falls down on the floor in his office. They take him off to the hospital, and they cut out the left parietal lobe of his brain. That's the part of the brain that controls speech. They surgically cut out his tongue, only in his brain. Bill Casey. He was the campaign manager for the Reagan campaign. In any case, you know, because Carter was way ahead right up until the last week. And it collapsed because of the hostages. He couldn't get the hostages out of Iran. And then the Iranians let him out the day that Reagan comes into office, literally the minute he puts his hand on the Bible, the Iranians release the hostages. And then, you know, a year later or so, Reagan is selling them missiles and spare parts. And when Congress investigates, they say, well, we were doing that in exchange for hostages. At the time, there were no hostages being held. This was a payoff for those hostages in 1980. In any case, Reagan becomes president in 1980 through that October surprise. And he has this insane idea that an economy being driven by demand, by people actually earning a decent wage and using that money to buy things, which will cause there to be demand in the marketplace, which will build an economy, that we don't need to do that anymore. We've done that for 6,000 years. Now we've got a new idea. And the new idea is we're going to have an economy driven by supply. We're going to give all the tax breaks and all, instead of incentivizing people to keep money in their company and reinvest in the company, instead of incentivizing by having high income taxes, and corporate taxes relatively high. Rather than doing that, and rather than making sure that the middle class has a decent wage by having a strong union movement and a relatively high minimum wage in this country, we're going to do the exact opposite. We're going to steal all this wealth from the middle class. Reagan doubled the taxes on everybody earning under $100,000. Actually, it was under $40,000 a year at the time, 30 some odd and change. But it would be $100,000 in today's money. He doubled the FICA tax and then cut the taxes for the wealthiest at the top. And he came up with this crazy idea. Oh, we don't need any demand-side economics. We've got supply-side economics. 30 years of supply-side economics now has wiped out this country. So instead of people buying things with money that they make from their salary, for the last 20 years, they've been buying things with money they borrowed against their house. And now the bill is coming due, and Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae are holding the mortgages. It's going to be bad.
The Tom Hartman Program.
You are listening to Tom Hartman.
Defending America from the weapons of mass deception.
$4.1 trillion. That's the amount of the bonds that are currently held by Freddie and Fannie combined. $4.1 trillion. You think that's not going to have an impact on the economy if these two organizations start going, ew? Man, the stock market crash in 1929, the housing market crash of 2008, and the Democrats are going along with this, let's throw Dutch kids at the dike. I mean, basically, not even sticking fingers in the dike. I mean, they're putting the whole body in there because the cracks are so big. I mean, the water is spilling out. And let's give everybody $600. That'll solve the problem for 6 months. Why do you want to do that? Why do the Democrats want to go along with the Republicans in putting cosmetic short-term fixes on the economy when the entire thing is on the edge of melting down because of 30 years of Republican policies? And the Republicans are sitting around going, oh, not bad. We win, we lose. We lose, we win. We win, we win. In other words, if John McCain becomes president, they'll blame anything that happens on the Republican Congress over the last couple of years. If Barack Obama becomes president, so they're going to hold this off, this disaster off until the first day he takes office. And then Bernanke's going to step out of the way. All the fingers get pulled out of the dike and whoom, down it all comes. $4.1 trillion. JS Mindset, MINESET.com is Jim Sinclair's website. It's really .com. JSMindset.com is a fascinating one. Let me recommend it. Check it out. 866-303-2270, your telephone number. Flo in Sunrise, Florida, listening on Winds. Hey, Flo, what's up?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm disappointed over the FISA thing because I spent hours. I actually called each senator's office. They don't really want to hear from you unless you're a constituent also.
Yeah, well, your voice will carry a lot more weight, although the committee chairs really do have an obligation to represent the entire nation.
They do. They'll listen to you, but if you're not a constituent, they suggest that I call my representative, my senator or whatever, and I've already done that. But you know what? I've been paying attention to all this coming down for these 8 years, and I think the Democrats are very weak. Papantonio does a show, Ring of Fire.
Yeah.
And he was on the tarmac of that 2004 election. Mm. He was going to go into Ohio, with the weird voter stuff that was going on there.
Right.
And he said a certain wing of the Democratic Party said, no, you'd look like a whining crybaby.
Yeah, I know. John Kerry pulled the plug on that one, and thinking that would cause the Democrats to say, oh, yeah, in 2008, we'll just nominate him again. It was close, so probably he can win the next time. And, he didn't get it. And this is the whole Bob Shrum pathetic Democratic strategy going all the way back to Dukakis of let's just roll over and let everybody see how mean the Republicans are. Well, everybody sees how mean the Republicans are, and they go, sometimes we want somebody who's mean. Or at least somebody who's going to, who's got a backbone. And you're absolutely right, Flo, and thank you for pointing it out. I mean, the Democrats have to start standing up to the Republicans. They have to start taking names and kicking ass. I mean, if the extent to which that they're just sitting back and go, oh, yeah, it's fine. No, we're not going to impeach him. We're not even going to have any hearing. Did he commit a crime? Oh, well, we'll just give him immunity. Oh, man. You can't do that. You can't do that. We can't let that happen. Bob in Atlanta, you think I shouldn't be talking like this?
Well, here's the deal. First of all, I'd like to thank you for the continuing education. But what I don't understand is we know what will happen if McCain gets elected.
Yes.
Yet, on your show, which I'm a very frequent listener to, I hear this currently. I hear this criticism of Obama, and I want to scream out at all these people. What do you want? I mean, let's the guy get elected, and then let's figure everything out. When we've got somebody in there who isn't George Bush, okay?
I am not suggesting,
it's
Bob,
not,
that anybody should be voting.
I'm not asking you to be
for
a lapdog,
for Ralph Nader.
I'm not asking you to be his lapdog.
Yes, you are.
I'm saying. Yeah, there is some criticism, but, to whoever is listening, what is the point of criticizing him? Are you going to vote for McCain and not vote for him?
Bob, I'm not criticizing Barack Obama as a candidate.
No,
I'm
but a lot of the people who are calling
Bob,
in are.
And they're certainly entitled to it. But,
I know, but
Bob,
I want to know what they want.
Bob, I'm going to put you on hold for a second so I can finish a sentence. I'm not criticizing Barack Obama as a candidate. What I am, however, doing, and I think it's my job, frankly, I think it's an obligation, given this microphone and this medium, I think it's an obligation to talk about the issues, the real issues, and the Constitution and the impact of this on the Constitution. What the Congress did yesterday, what the United States Senate did yesterday, was blow a hole in the side of the Constitution. And that is something that we can't just sit by and say, oh, well, let's not talk about that. It might hurt somebody politically. Frankly, the election is so far down the road from right now that I don't think that this is going to hurt Obama one way or another. I don't think that there's anything I could say or do that would hurt him with regard to this. And I'm not going off half-cocked and saying, oh, yeah, don't vote for him. Send money to Ralph Nader or whatever. And I don't have Ralph Nader on the show today talking about how, oh, it's just all one party and all that kind of stuff. I'm not going down that road.
Right.
But I do believe it is important that we, if we don't stand on principles, we got nothing. So,
no,
you, Bob, you're back.
I agree with you, and I've learned a tremendous amount from you. But I just don't understand what people want.
What people in the movement, as it were, what people who really are concerned about the future direction of this country and frankly the present as well.
Uh-huh.
What we would like is a government that respects the rule of law and the Constitution of the United States, number one. And number two, that behaves in a way that's in the best interests of the people of this country and life on Earth. I mean, we're to the point right now where we're literally endangering life on the planet. And number three, we'd like some peace on Earth. That would be kind of cool, too.
I'm with you 100%, Tom. And that's why I want Obama to be president.
Me too.
But volunteer
for his campaign,
that,
Bob.
The people that call in and are pecking away and now nitpicking, I just think it's right. You're right about protecting the Constitution, but let's just not provide.
Let me tell you, Bob. The minute that people who are listening to this program, regular listeners to this program, who people who have some political sophistication and understand what's going on out there, which I think is probably the majority of the listeners to this program, the minute that they hear me rolling over and playing good Democrat and it's all just fine, don't worry, everything's fine, that will harm Obama.
Yeah.
Because at that point, it's like, oh, they even got to him. Screw the party. I'm out of here.
Gotcha. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, Bob. I have to tell my truth. That's, there's just no way about it. I've been doing that for 6 years on this show and for 25 years writing books. And I'm not going to do anything other than that is say this is what is true. And I'll tell you, one of the biggest things that's true is that if John McCain's president, we're headed for a disaster. Anyhow, Scott in Freehold, New Jersey. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Tom. I'm going to be one of those, I guess, nitpickers nitpicking over FISA because there's no honesty in the argument that the Democrats who are supporting the amnesty and whatnot, they're not being honest in their arguments being put forward.
I agree.
And secondly, it's another example of being treated like a child. And I thought the trade-off with voting for Obama was that he was going to be the guy that wasn't going to talk down to you, that wasn't going to serve up platitudes, that was just going to talk honestly and openly about, you know, what was going on in today's politics. And
here's the problem, Scott. You know, maybe it was P.T. Barnum, maybe it was somebody else, but, you know, nobody ever failed to get rich underestimating the intelligence of the American people. You know, when I saw yesterday Chris Matthews say that the FISA legislation that was passed would finally allow, or, you know, that the whole point of it was to allow us to use technology to go after terrorists, when it had nothing to do with that. You know, at that point, I'm going, wow, even people who are watching this show are stupid. I mean, at a certain point, it's like the American people, it's not that the Americans are stupid. It's that 30 years of destruction of our economy has led to the point where people are working so hard, they're working two and three jobs, they're economically terrified, they don't know what's happening. The Republicans and conservatives have succeeded over the last 30 years in destroying the middle class, and along with it, they have destroyed people's ability to have enough time to pay attention to political discourse, and there's been this complete takeover of the media, the rolling back of the Fairness Doctrine, the rolling back of the requirement that broadcasters serve the public interest. And as a consequence, instead of news, we have infotainment.
And I was going to say, Tom, with Obama at the head of the party, he could get the coordination. He could get the people behind him to attack the Republican framing and to get their own interests and their own viewpoints across to the mainstream.
I agree, Scott. I think he made a political mistake. I think he made a big political mistake, and I think that he did it thinking, or his advisors suggested to him, that this would be a politically wise thing. Just like Hillary Clinton's advisors advised her to vote in favor. And for that matter, John Edwards has come right out and said he did not want to vote for that war authorization, and his political advisors told him to. Big mistake.
The Tom Hartman Program.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Turn to this theme that has been basically a mantra of this show. Before we get to Victoria Jones, the Talk Radio News Service here, I just have to say this. I've been telling you for years on this program that the people that your politicians listen to the most and the most carefully are the people within the party that they meet with on a regular basis. When your member of the House of Representatives comes back to his or her district and goes to a town hall meeting, the people who have volunteered for his campaign or her campaign, for that staff, the people who are working there as volunteers, who are helping, you know, who are serving the cookies and putting up the chairs and passing out the invitations and setting up the events, when they sit down in private with that member of Congress, they're the people that member of Congress is going to listen to, frankly, more seriously than even the high-paid consultants in Washington, D.C. And the same is true of the movement that has formed itself around Barack Obama. So if you are upset about the vote, for example, his FISA vote, volunteer to be a member of his campaign. Participate. Get active. Show up. Be one of those people that he has to talk to, that he does talk to, that he does listen to, that's on the inside, rather than standing on the outside throwing stones. So, anyhow, enough of that rant. Victoria with Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, with our daily update of the happenings in the world. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Tom. Well, we've got all kinds of goings-on, but congressional-type goings-on. Karl Rove was supposed to show up before a House Judiciary Subcommittee this morning, and shock, surprise, he didn't show up. He defied the congressional subpoena and refused to testify today.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
I thought you would be.
Yes.
I thought you would be surprised by that.
So is Todd Raines.
Now, the decision on whether to pursue contempt charges goes to the full Judiciary Committee and ultimately to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who herself is in the news because Representative Dennis Kucinich this afternoon is going to introduce his impeachment resolution on President Bush. And she has said something quite interesting because she's been saying that impeachment's off the table. But what she's now said is that this impeachment resolution is a Judiciary Committee matter, she says, and she believes that they'll get some attention being paid to it by the Judiciary Committee. She says, quote, not necessarily taking up the articles of impeachment, because that would have to be approved on the floor, but to have some hearings on the subject. Now, this is new. She's never said anything like this before.
Mm-hmm. You know, what's interesting, Victoria, is with regard to the one thing that we know is an absolute violation of the criminal law, that is the FISA statutes, where George Bush, you know, the FISA law, which he broke, and he admits he broke. In fact, he brags about having broken. That law says that any federal officer, and the president is a federal officer, who breaks that law shall be subject to 2 years in prison for each violation. And according to Jonathan Turley of George Washington University, professor of constitutional law, there are at least 30 clear violations of that law that George Bush committed. And each one of those may have within it hundreds or thousands of violations, but 30 two-year prison sentences. And so the only way that Bush, now that there's no way to pursue this in a civil court, the only way to go after it would be to go after it in criminal court. And, of course, George Bush has the ability to pardon anybody involved with him in that crime. And he can't pardon himself, but if he can pardon everybody involved with him, there'll be nobody to testify against him, or everybody would be, you know, simply refused to because they don't have to, because they don't have to worry about prosecution. And, therefore, he couldn't be, you know, held criminally liable, which is what I think he's going to do. I think that's why, you know, the Republicans were so incredibly happy about this yesterday, is because you take the civil stuff off the table and what's left is criminal, which Bush can simply pardon away. So the one exception to that, and it's in the Constitution, is that the president has the ability to issue a pardon except in cases of impeachment. So if they can have an impeachment proceeding going against Bush, this does not mean removal from office in the Senate. I'm not even talking about it getting to the Senate. If they can have the beginnings of an impeachment proceeding established in the House of Representatives and have that run right up until the day he leaves office, I believe, and I may be wrong on this, and I want to get Marjorie Cohn on, and it was a real constitutional scholar, and find out about this, but I believe that that may be able to stop him from fulfilling part two of what I believe we saw part one of his plan executed yesterday. What do you think?
Well, I think that's fascinating, but do you think they would really do it?
Would who? Yeah, of course he would do it. Look at it. Look at all the times he's thumbed his nose at the people and gotten away with it. Yeah, this would be small compared to some of the stuff he's done.
No, do you think the House would really go forward?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. But the way it starts, I mean, you know, the majority of the House of Representatives, well, for that matter, the majority of the members of the House Judiciary Committee were not in favor of impeaching Richard Nixon until John Dean came forward and with his testimony and they got the tapes. I mean, it was, and then all of a sudden, even the Republicans said, "Oh, you know, there actually was a crime here." And
they only have to do it for 6 months.
Yeah, exactly. And all they have to do is get some hearings going. So maybe we can lean on our members of the House of Representatives and on Nancy Pelosi's office and John Conyers. Let's get some impeachment hearings going. We're not talking about taking the guy out of office. We're just talking about the criminal indictment. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
Great talking with you. Coming up tomorrow, Friday, it's Brunch with Bernie. Senator Bernie Sanders, who voted against the FISA bill, by the way, drops by to tell you about what's really going on in Washington, D.C. Get your questions ready. He'll be taking your calls. Plus, you pick the topic. Anything goes Friday. And don't forget, my friends, activism begins with you. Democracy begins with you. Get out there. Get active. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You are listening to Tom Hartman.
For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.